All right. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where it is in the world that you happen to be joining us from.
Guten Tag and Buona Sera. And I was trying to learn hello or good evening in Italian, but I think Buona Sera, I think, is right.
And Susan is speaking in tongues.
Yeah.
it's a great way to start. In any event, thank you for joining our little jumpstart here. This is an introduction to creating websites using Python and Flask. This is a Web Wednesday, which, by the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't go ahead and plug the next handful of Web Wednesdays that are coming up. You'll notice them on the break slide. We've got a lot of cool stuff, Azure websites. I'm going to be in here doing Angular and MVC with Entity Framework. So a lot of really cool stuff. You'll see all that on the break slides. But, you know, what do you say we introduce ourselves and introduce the course and get rolling? Because we got a little bit to talk about today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Getting so, everyone rolling.
Yeah, why don't you talk about yourself?
So my name is Susan Ibach. My Twitter handle is Hockey Geek Girl. And my job is I'm a technical evangelist at Microsoft. And what that means is I help developers understand how to get started with our different tools and technologies. A lot of stuff with Visual Studio these days.
Mm-hmm.
I am also a Microsoft certified trainer. And the first program I ever wrote was on a computer with 64K of memory. So I'm not going to admit to how long I've been coding, but that might give you a hint.
Yes, that's a little bit of a giveaway.
Absolutely. I've worked with a lot of different programming languages, and I think one of the most important things to realize is, you know, as you play with all these different programming languages, is that, you know, you learn one language as a starting point,
yep,
and that can take you so many different places.
Yeah.
The principles we're going to see today in Python, you know, someday you're going to explore another programming language for web, and you're going to see similarities to what we see here today.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. In any event, I guess I should introduce myself.
I think so.
I am Christopher Harrison. I'm a content developer here at Microsoft, focused mostly on ASP.NET, although that's now expanding into an ever-broadening range of web technologies. And Office 365. I was an MCT for 15 years. I guess I still am, but not a full-time MCT like I was. And I got started with a Commodore 64. And I actually wrote a blog post on this a couple weeks ago where I talked about the fact that the first main program that I punched in, it was from a copy of an old magazine called Byte. And it was a clone of a popular game. And instead of being able to just type out print, you had to put in the question mark because otherwise you would run out of memory.
Yes.
So, yeah, so quite a little while. Beyond that, you can find me out spending time with my wonderful wife, four-legged child, and running more miles than most people would consider normal, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good on
yeah.
you.
So you do the same, though.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and hit our agenda for the day. So what we're going to start with is actually an introduction to both Flask as well as HTML. So if you haven't played around with Flask, not exactly sure why we chose Flask, what this is all about, we're going to get into that in Module 1. And then we'll also discuss a little bit of HTML. I am going to say right away, though, that if you're trying to use this to learn HTML, this is really not the best spot, but we'll talk about some resources where you can go get that.
Right, because Flask is what's going to allow, is one of the ways you can take Python onto the web.
Exactly.
So that's where the connection between the Python and Flask comes in.
Exactly. Yeah, and there's actually other alternatives that you could use as well. There's Bottle, there's Django. We went with Flask. We'll actually talk about why we went with Flask in a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
And then from there, we'll go ahead and actually take a look at getting in and creating web pages. And that's going to be our terminology warning section, because that's really where we're going to get into how those requests are going to be mapped and how we're going to control what code is going to get executed behind the scenes. And then all of that is really kind of the appetizer to the main event, the first of two main events, which is going to be Module 3, where we'll actually build the structure of our little trivia app that we're going to be using for our demos. And that's going to be the front end. So that's going to be the ability to ask the questions and answer them later on, add questions and answer them later on. But what we're going to see is we're going to want somewhere to actually store those, and that will roll us right on into modules 4 and 5, 5 being the second main event.
Right, where I'm going to go into the back end of things, because when one of the things we're going to see as we get into the websites is the fact that when you're building web applications, you have to think about what is the user seeing and how do we communicate with the user, as well as when they give us information, how do we store that information and how do we retrieve information on a server side. So I'm going to be talking about the Redis aspect and different ways that you can store data so that you can remember what's happening between calls.
Absolutely. And then finally, last but not least, we'll have done all this work here locally. Wouldn't it be nice to share this with all of our wonderful viewers and our friends?
Well, exactly, because by default, if I sit here on my computer building a website and I'm running my website and testing my website, it's only available on my machine.
You know, I noticed a common phrase throughout all of that. You kept saying website, website, website. I'm thinking we should probably get that onto the, wait, it'll come to me. We should get that onto the web.
Aha, yes.
Hey.
So exactly. So of course, we're going to finish off with saying, hey, now that we've built something cool, how do we share that and put it out there onto the great world of the internet, onto the web, so others can see it?
Absolutely. And that's where we'll close everything off, is actually taking that, putting that out there, and you'll actually be able to see all of our work. And if you've been following along at home, you'll even actually be able to get in and deploy that out as well. Fantastic. Now that we've talked a little bit about us and what we're going to talk about, let's talk about you. And let's kind of set where it is that we're aiming this. And what we're looking for is really, you know, new Python developers that are looking to take that next step. So if you checked out our Introduction to Programming with Python, which is a two-day event, lots of great content, you may even get a toaster.
That's right. Yeah,
you'll have to check that out to find that out. But if you followed along with that, this is really designed to be the next step from there. And then also burgeoning web developers. So if you're just kind of trying to check things out. But I would also mention that if you've done web forms, if you've done MVC, and you're really just trying to see how things are in other environments.
Yeah, because you do hear a lot about Python these days.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe you've been developing in .NET for web, and you're curious to just explore Python web development.
Yep.
This will be a reasonable course to take you down that path as well. You may be familiar with some of the concepts, because as we mentioned earlier, concepts tend to be the same from language to language, but we will show you things like the routing and so on for Flask and Python and that sort of architecture.
Absolutely. And I would say, kind of going back to a point that you had made earlier about programming languages having a lot of similar concepts, is that if you've already done C# or VB, a lot of what we're going to be seeing in Python is going to be relatively similar to what you've seen before, and so you'd probably be able to still follow along just fine, even if you haven't necessarily done Python. So if you've done another programming language, you can definitely check that out.
All right.
Or check this out. Last little thing is, of course, you can go off and get your 50 points. I still, I say this every single time. I do need to update that because it's actually now 2.5 million registered users.
Fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's your little voucher code. And I would also mention that it's on the FAQ page as well,
yes,
which is where you're also going to find our slides. Now, before we launch into Module 1, I do need to mention one last thing. And this is actually brand new. This is the first live MVA jumpstart that's going to have closed captioning. Right now it's closed captioning for English, but we do have closed captioning that you should notice on the video stream. And I'm not sure which side of the stream
I'm seeing comments about the closed caption. So it must be coming up.
There's a button like right about there somewhere. I think it's either on this side or it's on that side. I don't know which side of the stream I actually
end up on. We don't see the closed caption.
Yeah, we don't see us. But in any event, you will notice there's a little spot right down there that will say captions, and then you can turn that on or turn that off and actually see live closed captioning, which again, this is the first MVA Jumpstart doing that, which I think
very
is
cool.
Is pretty slick.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Okay. What do you say we talk about Flask?
Yeah, I think that's enough intro. let's get into the meat of this.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go ahead and introduce Flask, he said in English. So what we want to start off with is really just kind of some level setting here. So what is a web application? You know, kind of start there. And then what is Flask? Why did we go with Flask? And how do we actually get in, get started, and do that, as we've learned before, that Hello World application?
Yes.
And then we're going to close it all off with a primer on HTML. And the main goal with the HTML primer is just to make sure that if you follow along with course one, and maybe you haven't done HTML, that you're now going to see enough to know what's coming with HTML and how HTML works. Cool. Oh, wow. Actually, I've just been updated. The closed captions are available in 12 languages.
Wow.
The live ones? Wow. I thought they were just English.
That's what I was just told.
Fantastic.
That is extremely cool.
Wow. That's awesome. Cool. All righty. So, with that...
Now I'm really curious how they translated my hello, good evening in Italian got translated.
Yeah. Maybe they translated that back to English.
Maybe they did.
Okay. In any event, yes, you can expect corny jokes throughout the day. Let's go ahead and talk about what a web application is. And so I pulled this from Wikipedia, because, of course, when you're trying to figure something out, where do you go?
You go ask the internet.
Yeah. And that will invariably lead you to Wikipedia. So it's a web application, a web application or web app is any software that runs in a web browser. It is created in a browser-supported programming language, such as the combination of JavaScript, HTML, and CSS, and relies on a web browser to render the application. That clarifies everything, I think.
It clears everything up for me, absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't you love it when you get a definition like that? And you're like, we're going to teach you Python and Flask, and there is a description that doesn't use either of those words. But
yeah.
Don't worry, it will all make sense.
We are going to
bring
it all together.
So let's translate that into English.
Yeah, exactly. So what we're going to really wind up having with any web application is two main moving parts, that we're going to have a client and we're going to have a server. Now, the server, and I always like that restaurant analogy when we're talking about client and server, that when I walk into a restaurant and I sit down at the table, I'm now a client, I'm going to make requests of a server. The server, or waiter, waitress, whatever term it is that you want to use there, is then going to take my order, run back into the kitchen, have somebody cook it for me, and then bring that food back out to me.
Okay.
And so that really is that client server. So I'm the one making the requests, I'm looking for whatever it is, and the server is going to go off and do something behind the scenes. And so in our little case, with our trivia app, it's going to be that we're looking to create a brand new trivia question,
yep,
or ask a trivia question. But we could go further into maybe looking up restaurant reviews, maybe posting different updates on fill in your favorite social network here, etc. All of those different things are web applications. And again, they have those two same moving parts, that there's a server and there's a client. Now, we're going to focus mostly in on the server side today, and you are going to notice that there's a lot of different technologies that we can use to create the server side of a web application, that we could use MVC,
uh-huh,
we could use PHP,
yep,
we could use Node,
yep,
or, of course, we could use Python and Flask, which is what we're here to talk about.
Right.
I didn't really bother putting that up on the slide.
Yeah. So Python Flask falls into that server category.
Exactly, yeah. Python and Flask. There we go.
That's really important, because the client side is really important to realize. When you go open up something like Internet Explorer, which is where we go to do our client stuff, Internet Explorer doesn't understand Python.
Right. Exactly. And so you'll notice that regardless of what that server-side technology is, it's still going to work with your browser. And the reason for that is because what you're going to send out the door is markup and other languages that the browser can understand. So every browser is going to understand HTML. Every browser is going to understand JavaScript. Every browser is going to understand CSS. And this is a big question that I get from a lot of people who are brand new into web development, is they'll go, oh, okay, well, I'm going to do, let's say, MVC. So Microsoft MVC. I'm going to do MVC. Well, wait a minute. Does that mean that's only going to work with Internet Explorer? And the answer is no, because you're going to always send down HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, which are things that every single browser is going to be able to understand. So the app that we're going to build today with Python and Flask is going to work in IE, it's going to work in Chrome, it's going to work in Firefox, it's going to work in Opera, it's going to work in...
Whatever browser gets invented next.
Exactly.
Yeah. The key thing is whatever server technology you use, and we're going to be coding in Python Flask as our server, the code it finally sends out to the person sitting at the browser is always going to be HTML, CSS. Now, a lot of that's done for you. You don't have to sit there going, oh my gosh, do I have to write every little thing myself? So we're going to be focusing on Python Flask, though if you're going to get into more advanced web development, you probably will want to learn some HTML, CSS, JavaScript. That's a good next step for you if you're new to web development.
Absolutely.
But we're going to get you started with minimal HTML. We're literally going to do a little bit of HTML, but just with the Python that you know how to use, we're going to be able to get some websites built.
Yep, exactly. Now, the last thing to point out here is that there might be other components behind the scenes. Because let's think about, you know, an e-commerce site. And so I go into that e-commerce site and I say, hey, I want to place an order.
So these are websites where I go and order books and things online.
Exactly. So there's going to be a lot of other components because after all, when I go in and I say, well, I want that book, you know, they need to send a signal out to the warehouse. They need to send a signal out to the shipper who's actually going to get it to my house. So there might be a lot of other things that are going on behind the scenes. And I was just kind of like to point that out, that it might not just be your little app, that you might be incorporating services from elsewhere and bringing all of that in. Cool. Well then, what's Flask?
Yeah, how does Flask fit into this big picture of, okay, so there's the client, there's the server, there may be a database storing some information?
Exactly, yeah.
So well, as it turns clear it up.
Out, yeah, it turns out Flask is a micro framework for Python based on WorkZig.
Werkzug.
Forgive me if we're mispronouncing that. Jinja 2 and Good Intentions. I like the Good Intentions at the back end there. Okay, well, let's try to clarify that a little bit here. So Flask defined. Well, Flask is a very lightweight framework. And this is one of the biggest reasons why we chose this technology over a couple of the other ones that are out there for Python as the next step, because it does what it needs to do and nothing else. Now, one of the things that I always have a problem with when I'm trying to learn a new technology is sometimes just the entry point requires such a steep learning curve that it just turns me off to the whole thing, that there's just so many different moving parts and there's just so much that is just dropped onto you. You're just going,
it's intimidating.
Yeah, where do I start? So I need to learn this and this and this and this. And that's one big reason why we chose Flask, is it's very straightforward, that there it doesn't do a whole lot. You can get it to do a whole lot, but out of the box, it doesn't do a whole lot. It's very lightweight, and everything, as we're going to see, is going to be based on components. So out of the box, it does just a little bit, and then there's going to be components. So for example, if you want to call those services, if you want to do templating, and Susan's going to be very happy about this, if you want to do databases,
you can add it in. Yeah, but you start off with basically, hey, I want to display web pages, I want to do a little code, then go back to another web page. You start off with that, and then you add the extra pieces as you're ready for them.
Exactly, as you need. So that way you can focus in on, oh, okay, this is all I need to get started, start building up some strength there, and then go to the more advanced topics.
All right.
So the basic features here are the fact that it is based on Python, which is a nice entry-level language, very flexible, and it is also open source. So you can use this to build whatever it is that you might want. So why did we choose Flask? Well, it was for all of those reasons. It's unobtrusive, it doesn't get in your way, that nice low entry point, and it's also a great place to learn concepts. And one thing that we want to stress here is, because it's always one of those trade-offs whenever you're teaching something is, you know, how real world do you want to get, especially at the entry level? Because a full real world application is going to have a lot of moving parts and it's going to take quite a little while to develop. We're going to be going with a relatively simple application here, but you can absolutely 100% use Flask to create full-blown real-world applications. Now, you very well might find after a while, as your application starts to grow, that maybe you start to outgrow Flask as well. And absolutely. But I don't want you to leave here thinking, okay, well, the only thing that I've learned with Flask is just the ability to create a very simple little application. You can absolutely use this to create much bigger applications, create enterprise apps, 100%. All right. Well, let's actually get in and get started
here. Let's start looking at code.
Yeah.
I think it's time.
Exactly. So what we're going to need is our different components. We're going to need to talk about environments. We're going to need to talk about the Visual Studio templates. And then we'll do Hello Flask. So I promise we're going to get to code.
Okay.
Promise.
Good. Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Okay. So a couple of things that you're going to need. As it turns out, there's a lot of tools that you could use to write Python code.
That's right. You can get stuff for different machines. If you're working on a Mac, you can absolutely download software that will allow you to develop on the Mac.
Yep.
But we're going to be using Visual Studio. And what you do is you have to install Visual Studio. And within it, you'll need an add-on to allow you to do Python coding called Python Tools for Visual Studio.
Yep.
So step one, install Visual Studio. Step two, install the Python tools for Visual Studio. You can get Visual Studio for free. You can get that Visual Studio 2013 Community Edition. Please do make sure you have the most recent updates applied. And then last, you're going to need to install an interpreter. That's going to allow you to execute your Python code. So if you go down to pytools.codeplex.com, that website, you can find, if you go to the documentation tab, you can see all those installation instructions, the links to all those tools for you. So that one URL is really useful if you haven't set up your environment yet. You're going to want to do that.
Yeah, right up at the top of that page, you'll actually see a little link that will say installation instructions. Just click on that, and it will walk you through the whole thing. The one that I do want to highlight here is that Python interpreter, that the tools themselves just plug into Visual Studio, but they don't give you the Python interpreter.
Which allows you to actually run your Python code.
Exactly, which you're probably going to want to do if you write all of that code. So do make sure that you install that. Otherwise, you're going to wind up running into a couple of problems. Okay. Now, we've already highlighted the fact that Flask needs extensions, needs components, needs packages, whatever word it is that you want to use.
You're going to need to add stuff to Flask.
Exactly. You need to add stuff. Yeah, we'll just go with stuff. I like it. So you need to add stuff. So that stuff must be installed.
Right.
So the question is where? Well, as it turns out, you can install this into one of two spots. You can install this into the entire system, which is going to make this globally available. But the problem with doing that is sort of twofold. That number one, it's now going to be globally available, and maybe you don't actually want that. But also number two is a lot of the different add-ons that you're going to get are going to be parts of different open source projects. And so they're going to be updated at different times and at different speeds. And anybody who's ever done an update knows that sometimes you'll update one component over here, and then all of a sudden this one breaks.
Yeah.
So having the ability...
I know where you're coming from on this one, absolutely. There's nothing worse than you've got two projects up and running, and they're both working, and then somebody makes an update to something, and you can only handle that update in one of the two projects.
Exactly.
So it's really wonderful to have this option of not saying, let's install, because I might need version 2 here, I might need version 3 here.
Mm-hmm.
So when you install it globally, you're stuck with the same version for everything.
Exactly.
Maybe I want version 2 now, but for this project over here, I want version 3.
Yep. Yeah. So I would say as a best practice, install that into your local environment then. And you'll actually notice that Visual Studio will give you that option, that it will ask you, okay, well, where do you want to install this? Do you want to install this into System Python, or do you want to install this into the local environment? It will give you the ability to create a brand new local environment. And there's my little, wait, I need to back this up. I worked hours on this animation. Are you ready?
Okay, let's see. Oh, look at that. Wow, you've got it. You got like an expanding box.
Yeah, I know.
You're going to be doing a PowerPoint MVA next,
yes,
I can tell.
Yes, exactly. No, nobody wants to see that. install that into your local environment. And now let's actually get in and let's do a demo. All right. So let me bail out of my slides here. And let me open up Visual Studio. And it is worth noting here that in the background, we've already installed the tools that we need. So we're just going to be able to fire up Visual Studio, and away we go. And I also want to highlight, let's do this. I want Well, I didn't get it in private, but that's okay. That's just what came up. http://whack/whack, github.com, Geek Trainer, and Flask. That was what I called it. So one of the things that we did over the last couple of days here is we went in and started setting everything up for the demos that we're going to be doing. So you'll actually notice right here, the one that I'm circling down at the very bottom there, that trivia, that's the actual final, hey, we're done. We've also got, this is what it's gonna look like after module 2. This is what it's gonna look like after module 3. This is what it's gonna look like after module 5. So if you want to go download that and use that to follow along so that way you don't have to type furiously, you can do that. I'll put the URL back up in 1 second. But what I wanna highlight right here is this download zip. So that way, if you don't want to mess around with maybe doing this inside of Visual Studio and connecting to the project and so forth, maybe you haven't done that, just download zip and then away you go from there. I would mention, however, that there is the ability, I apparently can't talk and type at the same time, usually I can, Geek Trainer, whack, flask, there we go. This right here is the URL. I will mention that Visual Studio has the ability to pull this down for you, and there is, of course, an MVA on Visual Studio and GitHub that's worth checking out. So it's actually just called Visual Studio and Git rather than GitHub.
Yeah, so, cool. So we actually had just had a question in the Q&A window asking, hey, where can I get the demo code? So there you go, github.com/geektrainer/flask. Just pick that download zip file and you've got your own copy.
There we go. We'll put it up one last time there.
And I put it into the Q&A window as well. So.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, you're probably just going to want to keep that on copy and paste. I expect this to be a lot of people asking.
It's been known to come up again, yes.
Okay. Cool. All right. So there is that, but let me go into Visual Studio here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a brand new project here. So I'm going to say File, New, and Project. And then you're going to notice that I, of course, have, because I've installed the tools, Python, web, and then there are all of the different web options that that are available to me. Now, as we mentioned, you'll notice Bottle, Django.
Yep.
We're not going to be using
We're using Flask.
We've chosen Flask. Yep. So we've got Flask here. And then I'm actually going to sort of sidestep for 2 seconds, only because I always feel the need to point this out. A lot of times, you know, people hear Azure, and they think, Microsoft. Okay, well, that's good. And then they think, oh, well, then I have to do that with C#. As a matter of fact, you don't.
Nope.
So if you want to program your cloud services using Python, you absolutely can, 100%.
Yep.
Okay. Now, you're going to notice that we've got 1, 2, 3 Flask projects. And you might be wondering, which one should you choose? Should you go with Flask Web Project? Should you go with Flask Jade? Or should you go with the blank Flask Web Project? Here's the difference between them. So first of all, the difference between 1 and 2 is that the Flask Jade is gonna use Jade as its templating engine as opposed to Jinja. We're gonna be using the Jinja one, so we're not gonna go with that one, but that's the difference between those two. But the main thing about the 1 and 2 up there is that they're both built. That was weird. There we go. Huh. It's not letting me type on my screen. Try again. There we go. That was weird. In any event, they both use what's known as Bootstrap. Now, Bootstrap is wonderful. There's an MVA on there. Just go to MVAMS. You'll notice if you just search Bootstrap, you'll find the one that John Galloway and I did. We're more than happy to walk you through all of Bootstrap. But Bootstrap is a perfect example of what we were talking about before, of it's going to throw a whole bunch at you that you now kind of need to figure out before you can start writing your code. And again, that steep learning curve, we want to avoid that.
Yeah, we want to get started. We want to have our first website up without a massive learning curve.
Exactly. And so I do love Bootstrap, and Bootstrap, once you learn it, will make your life so much easier.
Yeah, but it's a good next step.
Exactly. Yeah, we want to keep it nice and easy, so we're just going to go with our blank Flask project here. The other big advantage of using the blank one is so many people will ask, okay, well, wait a minute. I went with this template, and it threw a whole bunch of stuff in there, and I know it works, but I don't know how it works.
Yeah, I've had that happen before, where I create the default project, and then I run the default project, and it's got like five pages I'm navigating around, and then I get lost of what code is where.
Exactly. And so I always find it nice when I'm trying to learn to just start with a clean slate. So is this going to mean more work for me? Absolutely, mm-hmm. because I'm just trying to learn. Am I probably going to, in the future, go with option one there, that Flash web project? Absolutely, but let me start here.
Because when I'm getting started, I'll actually understand everything that's in there.
Exactly. All right, so let's go in and let's call this Trivia MVA. So this will be the one that we'll be building sort of as we go along here. And I've got my little Python Flask. The solution name is just fine. And let me hit OK.
But wait, we're not doing Hello World?
Well, we'll do Hello World. I'm just not going to call it Hello
All
World.
Right. All right. Okay.
Now, this is what I was talking about before, is you'll notice that it says, hey, look, this requires external packages. We need to install them. Now, here's the great part. You do have to be internet connected, but this will automatically download them for us. So we don't actually have to go out and manually download and, you know, unzip them.
And have to know which ones.
Exactly.
I love the fact it says, you need some packages. Would you like me to get them for you? Thank you. Yes. Don't make me figure it out.
Absolutely. So it's just going to go off and grab them, but it just needs to know where to put them. And so you'll notice right here that it will say into a virtual environment or into Python 3.4. And remember that this is going to be shared by all projects.
So that was that system option you were talking about. That's that system global option you mentioned earlier?
That's exactly it. And then that virtual environment, that's going to be the private one just for here.
And that was the one you were recommending.
Visual Studio even recommends.
Even Visual Studio recommends. We all agree on this.
Exactly. Now, the one thing that I do want to highlight, if you remember back to the installation steps that we talked about a couple minutes ago, and I said, hey, look, you're also going to need the Python interpreter. If you forget to install it, this is where it's going to fail out, is right here, that it won't create that virtual environment, because in order to create that virtual environment, it needs Python. So this is where it's going to fail out if it doesn't have it. Okay, so with that, I'm now going to say install into a virtual environment. It's now going to say, all right, well, what do you want to name it? ENVS convention, who am I to argue? It's going to ask me what version we want. We only have 3.4, and I'm just simply going to click create. And then with blinding speed and amazing accuracy, it will go off and pull down all of the different packages that we are going to need. And just kind of chugga. Move your mouse, makes it go faster. Or it makes me feel better. One or the other.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I was just answering a question.
Oh, no, carry on. I am also kind of doing a little dance in the background here.
That's not your usual slide dance. I was waiting for the slide dance. Well, you're on camera now.
I am on camera. Yeah, but it wasn't the slide dance. It was the moving mouse dance.
I've always wanted a little crank on the side of my computer just so it would make me feel better. So when I'm waiting, I could turn a little crank, and then I wouldn't be able to tell myself I'm helping the computer go faster.
Bring back the turbo button. You know it makes sense. Okay. So let's take a look at what we've got here. Now, first of all, it did create this little app.py file, and I'm going to get to that. But I'm going to get to it in a minute. That what I want to start off with is you're going to notice over here that we've got our Python environment. There's our little ENV that we just created. And then you'll notice that we've got Flask, It's Dangerous, Jinja 2, Markup Safe, PIP, Setup Tools, and the WorkZig down at the very bottom. So Visual Studio automatically went out and downloaded all of those for me.
Nice.
Now, here's the thing. I need those here on my computer when I'm doing Flask development. But these packages are global. They're universal. Everybody knows, or Visual Studio knows, and that's really, I guess, the important part, knows that these packages are needed. So let's say that what we're eventually going to do, like we've already done, is we're going to take this project and we're going to push this up into GitHub. Which we did.
Yep.
Well, we don't need these packages in GitHub because they're the exact same packages for everybody. So
right.
There's no reason to keep uploading them into GitHub.
Yeah, because we just want to share the code we wrote.
Exactly. Exactly. So the problem then becomes, well, let's say, like maybe some of our viewers have done, is somebody's gone out and they've pulled down the project. And they're maybe seeing a little bang next to that Python environment, and they're trying to figure out, okay, well, wait a minute, this isn't working. What's wrong? Well, here's what's cool.
I love this feature. Because it's true, right? You know, yep. And you guys will run into that, actually, if you go and get our demo code.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to take our demo code, take that zip code, and try and open it up in Visual Studio, you're going to get the source code, but you're going to see that that environment's going to be empty. It's
exactly.
not going to have the pieces.
Because the environment pieces were not uploaded.
Now, you're going to show them the trick.
Exactly. Now, there's a little requirements text file. And on this little requirements text file, it's going to list off all of the different packages that we have grabbed. Now, you'll notice the only one in here is Flask. And you might be thinking, well, wait a minute, Christopher, I'm no math major, but I noticed there's only one there, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 items over there, and I'm pretty sure that 7 isn't equal to 1.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what's cool is, hey, you know?
7, 1, it's close, easily mixed up.
I forgot to tell you there was going to be math today. But in any event, what you're going to notice is that all that we had the entry for was just Flask. Well, when you say I want Flask, Flask up on the little Python servers is built to say, all right, well, if you're going to do Flask, you're also going to need It's Dangerous, Ginger 2, Markup Safe, PIP, Setup Tools, and WorkSync.
So all those environments that are listed there, Visual Studio knows when you ask for Flask, those are the packages you need.
Exactly. Yeah, because when it grabs Flask, it's going to bust that open, and Flask is going to say, well, I also have these requirements. So I also need you to go grab this one, this one, this one, and this one. So that's exactly what we've got going on here. Now, you're going to have the requirements text file from GitHub. You're not going to have the environment. Now, you may notice the little bang on it, and I personally find the easiest thing to do, just hit delete, and delete on the environment.
So this is kind of what it would have looked like if I'd taken the code from GitHub and just opened up, sort of, except
similar.
I'd see an environment with only one little
exactly.
thing in it.
Yeah, exactly. So just delete that environment.
Okay.
And then what you're going to notice is that I'm going to right-click here on Python Environments, and I'm going to say Add Virtual Environment.
So I'm putting a new environment back in.
Exactly. And then right down here, so you'll notice it's the exact same screen that we saw before.
Yeah.
But I want to highlight that little text right there.
Look at that.
It found a requirements text file. So all I have to do is just simply hit Create.
And it says,
get a sip of coffee.
So basically it says it's going to look at the requirements.txt file. From mm-hmm. that, it's going to add the necessary components to your virtual environment. And now you're off and running.
Exactly, while you're sipping on coffee.
Nice.
Yep.
Or water for me.
Okay. I need coffee.
Okay. I'm this loud and jumpy. Without coffee, you don't want me with coffee.
True story. All right.
Susan on caffeine and the poor people doing closed captioning would they'd just lose it. They wouldn't be able to keep up.
Fingers flying everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. So what you're going to notice here is it's now recreated that environment for me. So that's what you're going to want to do. So that's kind of the basic steps there. Now, let's go ahead and focus in on our code now. And so what this automatically did was it created an app.py file, which is by convention the entry point to our application.
Yeah.
And so what you're going to notice is there's a triple quote comment here.
And this is for those of you who took the Introduction to Python course with us. We used a different convention for comments. The person who made this template chose to use the triple quote convention for comments.
Yeah, and it's honestly, it's a little hacky. I'm not a fan of it.
Yeah, I prefer the other one.
Yeah.
But anyway, it is what it is. It's a comment.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a comment.
Yep, exactly. So what it's saying is hey, look, this is going to be, you know, what's going to host your development server. It contains the definition of routes and views for the application. Okay, cool. Then you're going to notice this little line here from Flask import Flask.
Right. Import we use to access code in libraries.
Exactly. So you'll notice from Flask. So Flask is the name of the package. What do we want? We want Flask.
So this allows us to access the Flask code.
Exactly. This little part right here is going to create our application. This underscore underscore name is just hard-coded in to just grab the name of the server, Don't worry at all about that. This is one of those things where you can just treat a tantamount to magic. It's just, it's one of those things, it just, it needs to be there.
Okay, so Vista falls into the category of, you know what, this is gonna be created for you, don't mess with those two lines
exactly.
of code.
Exactly, yep. Leave those two alone, and while we're at it, go ahead and leave that line alone as well. And that's just simply going to create a little interface that, again, is just going to help serve up our pages.
So really, our code starts
here. Yeah. We'll just do not touch.
There we go. I like that.
And
our code goes down later.
Do not touch.
Yep.
There we go.
Perfect.
Our code.
Yes. So now we get to the part where we're really interested in
exactly.
playing around.
Yep. Yeah. Happy faces are optional there. So, okay. Now, what you're going to notice down below here is this little thing called app route or root. Route?
Yep.
Root. I'll probably bounce back and forth between the two pronunciations. And then you'll notice a little single quote, forward slash single quote, which of course is a string, and a forward slash. Now, we're going to get into routes in the next module. So for right now, you can treat this tantamount to magic. But what this is basically going to say, and you know, one of the conventions that a lot of people like to do is they like to actually put out what the URL is that this is going to represent, which in our case would be whatever the name of the server is, forward slash.
Yep.
And that's it.
You do see that a lot.
Exactly. And so, you know, you might go in a little bit later, and again, we'll talk about how to do this, and it might be maybe server and then question.
Right.
And then, you know, maybe server and then create or, you know, whatever it is that it happens.
A lot of times when you visit a restaurant website, there'll be a slash menu, a slash directions.
Exactly.
Same sort of thing, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah. And slash is sort of the main restaurant page.
Exactly. And we're going to see how to make all of that.
Okay.
Now, what I'm going to do for right now is I'm just going to get rid of that comment because we don't need it. And Susan, I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Okay.
And I'm just going to circle, or square, I guess, that one little spot right there. Just the blue section, just what's inside the blue. What is that?
That is pure Python code.
Okay.
And that is Python code, but is creating a function called hello. And the function we're creating called hello returns a string that says hello world.
So there is nothing that's special there.
No, that is a standard Python function.
That's just hello world. There's nothing extraordinary there.
Nope.
And this is the biggest point that I want to make in both this module as well as in the next module is, you know, sort of like, you know, a little girl named Dorothy and, you know, she had the power all along to get home. You've actually had the power to build an awful lot with Flask by learning Python. So if you already took that first Python course, you already have a lot of the knowledge that if you know how to create Python, now it's just a matter of kind of figuring out, okay, well, what methods is this adding in? What components is this adding in? And how do I work inside this environment? But the language is the same. So you're basically expanding your vocabulary, if I can just sort of beat that analogy into the ground.
I like the idea of it's expanding your vocabulary. You're expanding your tools.
So
you know, think of it as a toolbox. We're adding one more tool to the toolbox.
Exactly.
We've got the Python tool. Now we're adding the Flask tool.
Yeah.
And together, that allows us to bring it to the website.
Exactly. Yeah, you're starting to learn all of those different, you know, colloquialisms and all of those different kind of cultural references that, you know, when you're learning like a normal language, I could go off and I could learn French and all the syntax on French and how to conjugate verbs and all of that good stuff. But if you drop me into the middle of France or you drop me into the middle of Montreal and expect me to speak, there's still going to be a lot more that I need to learn because I need to learn how to now work inside of that environment. So, you know, as people make different cultural references and, you know, say, for example, things like Bob's your uncle or whatever the French equivalent of
But my favorite, t'es dans les patates, one of my favorite, which means you're way out in left field, you know, middle of nowhere. It's a very Canadian French expression.
Yeah, or you're way out in left field.
Yeah.
And again, you know, that's a very, you know, cultural
thing. So it's vocabulary.
Yeah,
and the more you understand, the more you can communicate, the more you can do.
Exactly.
So in this case, we're expanding what we can do by expanding our coding vocabulary.
Exactly. But you still have the basic structure, that you still have that basic language. So you still know how, you know, those basic verbs and so forth. So now we're just expanding the vocabulary there. Okay. So now that we've got that little part right there, and again, I know I haven't spent a lot of time on that line.
We'll come back to it.
We're going to come back to it. And then this line right here, or that little block, again, this is all server-side code. What this is actually doing is this is launching our server.
Yeah.
And what do you mean that's launching our server? Well, I'm so glad that you asked this. I'm going to do this through the menuing system. This, by the way, will be the only time probably I'm going to do this through the menuing system. I typically just go F5 or Control F5. But just to kind of show, I'm just going to start without debugging here.
OK.
Now, what you're going to notice is I get a little thing saying the project's out of date. OK, fine. And all right, let's do two things here. First thing that I want to do is, since I created a new project, I have to change my color scheme here.
Yeah, it's a little easier to read on the screen that way.
Exactly. This right here, this command line is our server. This is our server.
That's the server that's running our code for us.
Exactly. That you'll notice right here, if you want to get, you know, kind of uber technical, it's actually making the little request using HTTP 1.1, and we had a 200 response. So there is our server. This is actually what's running this. And in fact, you'll notice, if I close this out, by the way, you are going to notice there's Hello World. Let me...
All right, okay, we've got our Hello World code running there. I like that.
But you'll notice if I come back to here and I hit refresh, give it a second, you're going to notice that it's going to fail, because I closed that server. That little command line was our server.
And that was running our code. So when we stopped it running, then our website stopped working.
Exactly. And so you'll also notice that we said hello world. So let me just go in and update this. Let's say, for example, hello Susan, just to prove there's nothing up my sleeves except for my arms. Thank you for laughing at that, Barry. What you're going to notice is that, sure enough, it now says, hello, Susan.
Right.
So whatever it is that we return back...
is what's displayed on the web page.
That's pretty boring text, don't you think so, Susan? It's got your name.
I know, but I think we could be able to dress it up a little bit. So we're not limited to just displaying text in terms of what we return. We can do something with it, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Web pages usually look pretty fancy.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Different colors or bold and italics.
Let's get a little better. Yeah, exactly. And so what we're going to need for that, back to my slides here. Da-da-da-da, with a flourish and everything, is our HTML primer.
Yes.
No.
Because as well as being able to return text, we can actually return HTML.
Because really, when you get right down to it, HTML, just text. That's really it.
Yeah,
you know?
And HTML is that one of those languages that browsers understand.
Exactly.
So that means when we return HTML to a browser, it can say, oh, I know how to display that.
Exactly.
So Internet Explorer, Chrome, Firefox, they understand
Firefox.
HTML. Firefox. I'll get there eventually. Maybe I should have had caffeine this morning.
You want some coffee?
No, I'm good, thanks.
All right, so anyway, so let's talk a little bit about HTML and some basic concepts here. So HTML stands for Hypertext Markup Language. Okay, cool.
That's what it is, okay.
Yep, there we go. So what this is it's the standard markup for creating web pages, and it really consists of two main components, what are known as elements and attributes. Now, an element is going to consist of two tags, an open and a close, where it's going to either describe or do something to what's inside of it. So in our little case right here, our little body, it's describing, hey, look, that's the body. That's what we're trying to display out.
The main part of our web page or whatever.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
It's like the body of a letter, the body of the page, the body of the book, the main part.
Exactly, exactly. And so you'll notice that all of our tags are going to be contained inside of angle brackets.
Yep.
Now, those tags, because we always get asked this, case-sensitive,
yep,
not case-sensitive, just treat everything like it is case-sensitive. Technically, HTML is case-insensitive, but convention is always use lowercase letters.
It's a good habit, also, because it's something I'll be talking about this afternoon.
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, it's one of those things you just want to get yourself into good habits right away that, you know, whenever I'm teaching an intro to programming class, I swear... half the day, if it's a full day, I spend like half of it just going over good practices, because you want to learn those skills right away, because that's always what you're going to lean on later on. So, you know, learn good things. Now, let's talk a little bit about those closing tags. A lot of times you don't need them. Because what's going to happen, and sort of a long story, find me on Twitter and I'll explain the whole thing. But what's going to happen is the browser's always going to make a best effort.
Yeah, it makes an educated guess. If you leave off a close tag, it says you probably meant to close that. And if it can figure it out, it'll just keep going.
Exactly. And so the HTML doesn't need to be perfect.
Yep. It's very forgiving. But
try to keep it as clean as possible. It's going to aid the browser, but more importantly, it's going to aid the developer.
And that's you. It's going to make your life easier if you
exactly.
get in the habit of, yeah, just make everything lowercase,
yep.
close your tags. It'll be easier for you to read. It'll be easier for you to update later when you want to improve and make changes to your code.
That's exactly it. Now, as a result, there are some tags like BR, which by the way stands for line break, which just simply means go to the next line.
Yeah, it just gives you, I use that a lot when I'm building web pages, just makes a blank line between.
Yep, exactly. Yeah,
between two lines or two words.
Go to the next line. So technically you don't need to close them. It is still best practice to close it. And then the cool kids, I've been told, I'm not a cool kid, put a space / angle bracket as the shortcut to close them. So if you've
right.
ever seen that, and we'll be seeing that a little bit later on today, that's what's happening. It's
yeah.
just the shortcut way.
Yeah, because that forward slash is always how we indicate the closing tag. So
exactly.
So sometimes
yep.
it literally is open, close, all in one
yep.
string.
Exactly. Now, our elements are going to be grouped together in many types, and there are more elements here than I'm going to stop and list, because we'd be here all of today and tomorrow and the day after that.
And there is a full course on HTML, so we're not going to try and do that, but we're going to give you enough to be able to start playing.
Exactly, exactly. And so let's kind of break it down into three main categories here. We've got what are sometimes known as semantic tags, new to HTML5, and they're really just there to describe the data. So this is my header, this is my footer, this is the navigation section.
Yeah, they just help the programmer sort of understand the different parts of the page.
Well, they also help search engines as well understand the parts of the page. Because when Bing comes along and crawls your page, it needs to be able to quickly figure out what's on the page. And so if we just simply say, hey, look, this is bold, and actually I'm going to sort of skip to the end here. If we just simply say something is bold, well, what do I know about it? I know it's bold, but that's all that I know. If I see it contained, however, inside a footer, now what do I know? Well, now I know that that's the footer of the page, and now I've got a little bit more of an understanding about what's going on there. So you are going to notice that there are those format tags, and you are going to notice that I'm going to use them today just to try and keep things a little bit simple. But generally speaking, you want to avoid those, and instead you want to use CSS, you want to use style.
Which we're not getting into today.
Exactly. But
so we're going to start you off with, oh, look, you can make change the way things look. When you start building full websites, you can probably want to use CSS to control the appearance of your web pages.
Exactly.
In terms of bold, font, color, and so on.
Yep, that's it. That's it. Yeah, you can actually do all sorts of cool things with
yeah.
CSS. There's an MVA for that. And then last but not least is our controls. And again, we're going to see these a little bit later. This is where we can get things like links and buttons and input tags
yeah.
As well.
That we will play with.
Yeah, and that's just sort of like a real quick synopsis of some of the different things that are available to us. A standard HTML page is going to look like this. HTML. Oh, wow.
You put HTML in your
I
HTML.
I did. Susan, cause a distraction.
Cause a distraction.
Yes.
But I'll mention another neat thing about the header, footer, and nav, those ones we use to sort of indicate the different sections of a web page. It's kind of cool. So those are also used by screen readers.
Yes.
So a lot of the tools that, for people who have low vision issues and rely on those ones that speak to them,
yep.
They actually use those header, footer, nav to help tell a person, hey, this is the header of the web page and the body of the web page as well.
Absolutely true.
Is yep. that a long enough distraction?
That was perfect.
Okay.
So apparently when I was typing out this slide, I moved a little too fast. It's one of the nice things about having IntelliSense, and it will automatically fix these things for you. I meant head there. Now, head and header are different. So this is not header, this is head. And inside of head, we can do different things like adding little things to the page, for example, metadata, or in this particular case, adding the title to the page. And we'll see where that's going to be used in a couple of minutes. And then finally, last but not least, is the body. And you'll notice inside the body that I've used a div tag. And this div tag is sort of a generic helper tag that's going to indicate that whatever's contained inside of there, by default anyway, the next div tag will be on the next line, the next div tag will be on the next line, and so forth. So just kind of.
So it just allows you to make the code line by line?
Exactly. Yeah. In a nutshell, there's other things that could go along with the div tag, but for right now, that's sort of perfect. The last little thing that I want to mention is attributes. These are key value pairs, and they just allow us to add additional things to a particular tag. So for example, an A tag or anchor tag, which is going to create a link. So if you clicked on this, where is it going to go? www.microsoft.com.
We use those a lot on web pages. This is how you move from page A to page B to page C.
This is hypertext.
Yes.
See, little link. There we go. Cool. Let's go in and kind of take a look at a demo here.
Yeah, for some code.
Yeah, let's spice up our little page here. And so what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to kind of build out the whole thing. Is let's say HTML.
Uh-huh.
Let's say head.
So now you're actually typing in action. So instead of just a string you're returning now, you're actually returning HTML. But that's okay because we know that the client, the browser, Internet Explorer or Chrome or Firefox, understands HTML. So it knows how to read this text and display it as per the rules of HTML. Oh, and you're using H1, which is header 1.
That's a
tag that HTML understands to display it as a primary header. So it has sort of default ways to display things with H1. But it basically is a header.
Okay. Now, what I'm going to do here...
You're getting a high five if you manage to do this without a single typo.
Well, fortunately, I kept it very easy for myself.
Yeah, that's a lot of open and close angle brackets, though. So
it certainly is. Okay. And I'm just going to try and format this.
And I see you're trying to keep everything lowercase on your tags.
Yeah.
And I can see you're closing tags. So you've opened header and then you've closed the header. You open title, you close title. And you can see how they're nested inside each other as well. That's very common inside HTML.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Our lineup is going to be okay. This will work.
Okay.
So what I want you to notice here is simply the fact that I built out this full HTML. And HTML at the end of the day is just text. That's really it. And so it is going to be returned back as HTML. But you know, again, it's just simply text.
Still a string.
Exactly. And so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to control F5 here. I'm going to launch this. And so now you're going to notice, first of all, hello, Susan.
I feel special all of a sudden here. All right. Oh, hi.
Yeah. So you'll hi. And you're also going to notice, by the way, that there is hello world there.
Is that what the title tag did?
I'm so glad you asked that. As a matter of fact, that is exactly what that title tag did. And then you're also going to notice, and you can right-click and hit View Source. I always go Alt-V, C, which will do it, but you know nobody ever
I didn't nuke shortcut for me. Oh, so there you can actually see the HTML code that we sent back to the browser.
Exactly, yeah. Now, obviously we could keep doing this, but we probably...
Then it would be an HTML course.
I would say two things. That A, yeah, it'd be an HTML course. And actually, slide. There we go. Yeah, if you're wanting to get more in HTML, there's an MVA course on it. Bob Tabor, the HTML5 CSS3 Fundamentals. Great course to go check out. You'll also notice the 20480 full 5-day course taught by Microsoft Certified Trainers. And hey, we were both Microsoft Certified.
We were.
We still are.
So there's lots of material out there to help you get started with HTML5. So you can, that's it said, once you've mastered sort of the Python and Flask components, now you're seeing how the HTML affects the output, those are some great resources for the next steps.
Absolutely. Okay. So what did we learn? Well, we learned how to manage Python environments.
Right, setting up environments, installing the different packages.
We learned how to get started using Flask and Python.
Yep, even which project type to use.
But it sort of begs the question, what in the world can we do with this? Well, for right now, we just built a foundation.
Yeah.
So now what we can do is we can use this to begin pursuing deeper knowledge. And you know what? That's exactly what we're going to do after a 10-minute break, because I don't know about you, but I could use a break.
I think maybe I need some caffeine.
All right. We'll see you guys back here in 10.